We're heading for a new year and a time of hope. Let's concentrate on the power of one.
My name's Bernadette, and every day I try and do a kind thing for a stranger. It's just like a good deed. Okay. So I wondered if I could give you these.
This week, some inspiration to make your own meaningful changes and maybe make the world just a little bit better. I'm Susan Barnett, and this is 51% The Women's Perspective. Whether this has been a good year or a hard one for you, we're heading into a fresh start. And this week's show is devoted to inspiring stories that might remind you that you can make a difference, both in your own life and to someone else. First, a story about small gestures and the changes they can make. Have you ever resolved to do anything every day for a year and actually accomplished it? One woman in London surprised herself and others by doing just that. Producer Kirsty McGuire has the story.
This is going to be interesting. I think it's a bit crazy. They probably wonder what's going on. Hello. Hello. My name's Bernadette, and I'm a regular customer of yours. And exactly a year ago today, I came in here, and there was a boy in front of me in the queue at the post office, and he didn't have enough money for his stamp, and I paid for his stamp. And then after that, I decided to try and do something kind for a stranger every day. And because it started here, I thought I'd finish it here, so I bought you some flowers.
My name is Mukesh Kumar, and I am working here last 3 years. Helping people or something like that, that is good for the community, for the people, so other people get lesson from that.
21st of October 2011, 64th Day of Kindness. Gave £5 to lady who had her bike nicked. 27th of October 2011, 70th Day of Kindness. Took homemade cupcakes to my favourite charity shop in Deptford. 27th of November.
I started on August the 18th, 2011. Nobody paid particular attention to it until they started noticing that I was still doing it. And now people are like, oh my, I can't believe that I'm still doing it, that I've kept it up.
Day of Kindness. Left sweets in a phone box.
They're £6 a bunch.
So I've given flowers a few times to strangers. It's pretty impulsive. I'll go to the florist and choose the most cheerful colour. You know, it's more Amelie than Gandhi, do you know what I mean? It was fun for me as well. I might just wander around and see who looks like they could do with it. Approaching the Soho sex shops. This fetish wear shop, an adult-only tattooist claiming to sell original Viagra, something called Camagra Jelly. I've no idea what that does. Poppers. It's quite a lively shop. Hello. Yeah. Just see if there's anyone where in the doorway of this awesome peep show shops. I'm going to give them to this lady.
There must be something that opens in you when you do anything as a daily practice. Approaching strangers with openness every single day, after a relatively short period of time, just becomes instinct.
Hello. My name's Bernadette, and every day I try and do a kind thing for a stranger. It's just like a good deed. Okay. So I wondered if I could give you these.
I never really get rejection now. I don't get that. Or maybe it's just that I don't receive it as rejection.
So that's it.
That's it?
Yeah, I've been doing it every day since... You know the riots happened in London last year?
Oh, yeah,
because it was very upsetting.
Yeah.
And so I decided I was going to try and do something nice for someone every day.
That's amazing.
And today is my 358th day. Yeah. I'm doing 366 because it's a leap year, isn't it?
Okay, okay. Terrific. So, yeah. Thank you. I won't forget.
What's your name, sorry?
Anne.
Give us a hug.
Okay.
Nice to meet you. You enjoy your flowers.
I will.
I'll suit you.
Big surprise. Thank you very much.
For me, it came out of a grief mixed with anger for and on behalf of London.
Rioting is now on a scale not seen in the UK for decades.
There are pockets of our society that are not just broken, but frankly sick. We have seen the worst of Britain, but I also believe we've seen some of the best of Britain.
It was really as simple as, I don't know what I can... That's so big. So there's just a little thing that I can do. 146th Day of Kindness. Another gift through the post, this one for Wendy Dumper. and Wendy emailed me back saying, as I opened the box and looked in lovingly at the gifts, my face felt like a big beam of smiles, and then I started to sob tears of joy. It really was a wonderful moment, even though it was just me. I normally write a little card. Okay. On the envelope it says, "Read me." It's a little Alice in Wonderland reference, really. And then on the other side, there's a little golden star, and it says, "When you wish upon a star, it might come true." So it's just like a kind of a little bit of light-hearted magic.
I was going through a really, really rough patch. I had no job. I'd just had a hip replacement. I was at home. I was really on the edge. Suddenly, this card came in the post with all sorts of little details on. And inside was this message.
"Hello, stranger. Hello, and thank you for accepting this small gift. This is to wish you a wonderful day and to invite you to make a wish."
And it just came from nowhere. I had no idea why it was there. I kind of opened it, and then I was so kind of freaked out by it, you know, and I was in such a dark space, I just put it back in the envelope and I put it on top of the telly.
I don't usually meet the people that I give these things to because they are strangers. I just have to think, well, maybe that's cheered them up and I'm not going to know, but I quite like that I don't know what the result of it is.
Every now and then I would go up and I would look at it. It was kind of like a drug, but I always put it back in the envelope. It was like I couldn't leave it out because they'd be like taking the drug all the time. Now it's out. It's like, you know, when it's your birthday or Christmas, you have cards out for a certain amount of time. This will stay out forever.
A friend of mine, Sharon, she said, "Oh, I'm going to take up the baton." So she's going to start doing 366 Days of Kindness. We're hoping that we're going to pass it on every year to someone else. The only thing I think I've done any good at all is demonstrating that you can just do a little thing. The only way to change the world is to change yourself. So I can't change government policy and I can't change people's minds about each other. I can change myself. That's all I can do. That's all any of us can do.
This production is part of the Global Story Project with support from the Open Society Foundations, presented by PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. The producer was Kirsty McGuire. You can keep up with Bernadette's Kindness Revolution on Twitter by following @BettyRussell or using the hashtag 366 Days of Kindness. Coming up, more stories about making a difference, big and small. If you missed part of this show or want to share it, visit the 51% archives at WAMC.org. This week's show is number 1275. Sometimes doing something good can be a good business model. Take, for instance, a business aimed at providing good quality food and supporting local farmers. Even in the local food-loving Bay Area of San Francisco, most food is not farm to table. It's farm to processor, to distributor, to wholesaler, to retailer, to the consumer. But shoppers increasingly want to know where their food comes from, and a group of food lovers and techies teamed up to shorten the supply chain by putting the food market online.
On a Wednesday afternoon in the Mission District, a white van has pulled up to the curb and opened its doors.
"I just needed eggs this week."
"Just eggs?"
"Just eggs this
good,
week.
Good.
I know, you guys have good quality eggs for probably the cheapest price right now."
Inside are shelves lined with bags of meat, bread, eggs, fruit and fresh vegetables. And one by one, customers stop by, but they aren't here to browse.
"Yeah."
"I don't expect it to stay that way."
"Well, let's hope."
Chances are you've used the internet to buy clothes, books or gifts. It's probably less likely to be your go-to spot for apples, lettuce or beef. And that's exactly what Good Eggs, the company that owns this van, is trying to change.
"I got a lot this time."
"You got a lot this week?"
"Yep."
"Yeah."
"Thank you very much."
"You're welcome. See you next week."
"See you next week."
"Adios."
Here's how it works. People go to the Good Eggs website and select which food they want to buy. There's all sorts of things, even baby food. It's all grown organically wherever possible, and the growers and producers are all local. Once the order's placed, Good Eggs coordinates with the farmers and food makers who deliver their products to the tech company's warehouse in the Dogpatch district. Good Eggs then either delivers the order directly to the customers, which costs about $4, or it can be picked up at vans around the city. Today, 20 to 30 people will drop past during the hour to collect their food, including Rebecca Sawyer.
"Today I got eggs, bread, asparagus, strawberries, and pork chops, and walnut butter, which, I mean, you know, sounds like it might be good.
Sawyer says buying through Good Eggs is slightly cheaper than buying at organic grocery stores, though she says it's not always more convenient. But for her, it's better than the alternative.
Oh, forget it. I haven't been to a supermarket in years.
There are more and more customers thinking like Sawyer, which is why farmers markets are blossoming across the nation. 25 markets are held each week in San Francisco alone. Still, the local food market only makes up less than 1% of food sales across the US. That could change as the tech sector gets more and more involved in the business of farming.
Okay, so imagine it's 6 p.m., you're on your way home from work, you're really tired, and all you want to do at that point is have a nice home-cooked meal for dinner.
This is Food Hackathon. In a warehouse near the Soma district of San Francisco, about 200 engineers, designers, and foodies are coming up with new ideas to build technology products and tools specifically for the food industry. The day starts out with people standing up in front of the crowd with 1 minute to pitch their idea.
So I need anyone who's opinionated about food or fun to work with me to actually get everyone addicted to leveling up from their lettuce, to be socially shamed by their friends when they forget to monitor their soil moisture and otherwise.
One of the mentors at the hackathon is Nathan Jones, who's founder of a startup called AgLocal. It connects independent farmers and ranchers directly with chefs. His in-laws are farmers in Kansas.
Just hearing their stories of how they would see their friends' names on menus, but they know that that person's really poor. But on the menu, then, you know, the steak's like, you know, $80 meal. It's like, but this doesn't make sense. Like, this person that I know, their name's right there. That's a poor person, but this steak is $80 on this menu. So obviously there's like a problem there.
Across the US, farmers make less than 16 cents for every dollar consumers spend on food. There are some existing models to help them make more than that. Farmers markets, for example, or community-supported agriculture subscriptions, CSAs.
Hi, I run an online farmer's market. I'm the founder.
Lauren Bass runs an online market called Lollabies. Like Good Eggs, it connects consumers with local cooks, farmers and food makers. She got into this business because she wanted to find a better way than the CSA.
You get too much food that goes to waste. You don't get a lot of variety. And you have to go pick it up from a farmer, you know, in a parking lot somewhere between 3 and 5 on a Wednesday.
And she says many consumers won't go to a farmer's market every week either.
So basically, we're giving farmers access to that group of people.
I appear to know my way around now, but, you know, first several trips to the city here was a little intimidating.
At 6 o'clock on a Sunday morning, I join egg producer Dan Martin on his weekly deliveries around San Francisco.
Hi, I'm Dan Martin. They call me Dan the Eggman. I own and operate the Lazy 69 Ranch, which is a free-range organic egg operation with my wife and two young kids.
Martin's one of Lollabies' producers. He also supplies markets like Rainbow Grocery and Buyrite. Every Sunday morning, he gets up at 1:30 to pack his truck.
So this is Egg Force One.
Once Egg Force One is loaded up, he then makes the four-hour journey to San Francisco from his property in Northern California. His 3,000 hens produce up to 12,000 eggs each week.
You know, from a guy that earns his living, you know, an egg at a time, an expensive parking ticket is like throwing a case of eggs out the window.
Martin says selling through the startup gives him the freedom to concentrate on the farm.
Because my operation is a seven-day-a-week operation, and so I would have to be theoretically at a farmer's market every day of the week trying to sell my eggs, whereas they provide me the relief I need to focus on what I'm good at, which is raising chickens that lay delicious eggs.
Martin says he sells his eggs for the same price to each buyer, but he likes the control over his product and relationship he has with the startup as compared to a larger market.
I have no say-so or no influence on the retail price of my eggs. And so often is the case, they see the opportunity to capture profits off of our hard work and say selling our eggs, retailing them for $10 a dozen or something more than that, which is a lot of money for a dozen eggs.
Instead, Martin says selling online keeps the retail price low and allows him to sell more. He says food startups have a future.
I believe it's going to require sincere startups like Lolabies to keep farmers like me sustainable.
Back at Food Hackathon, the crowd is mingling, making connections and discussing ideas for food websites, apps and companies. So what is the next big thing for food?
What we're doing basically is investigating the potential for the use of insects in feeding the world.
Daniel Imri Sitanaike is co-founder of a company called Tiny Farms. He says there are already companies experimenting with the use of cricket flour in protein bars, and consumers in Thailand are using insects directly in meals.
America obviously isn't really ready for that right now, but across the world, any possible way you can imagine insects being used in food, they are the same as any other type of food, basically.
Which means maybe soon you'll be able to order your snack of insects online. In San Francisco, I'm Mary Willis for CrossCurrents.
Curious about how it works? Check out goodeggs.com. Now a story about someone concentrating on what he can do for his hometown. Detroit and other Rust Belt cities are in crisis. Business has left. People have left. Stretches of abandoned neighborhoods go for blocks. But there are locals who are determined to keep Detroit alive, with or without the help of government. There are survivors in Detroit, and you might even say they're heroes. One of them is an ornamental metal worker introduced to us by producer Zach Rosen.
Carlos Nielbach is old school. He casts, he welds, he rivets.
Railings, gazebos, trellises.
Most of his pieces look like they're from another era, like a trellis adorned with these incredible black metal flower petals riveted onto thin metal stems.
Crafted with the same techniques that was used turn of the century.
You don't learn these kinds of skills in Detroit, or really anywhere in this country.
I was born in 1959 in Celle, Germany.
Carlos is German-American, African-American. His mother, a white woman, and his father, a former African-American GI.
There are thousands of children of occupation. Children, they came about when the occupying force, this good-looking GI soldiers over there, forget all about the animosity, the wars, and fell in love and had relationships, and as a result, children came out.
And Carlos was one of them. But in 1950s Germany, racism was rampant among Germans and the American military. Carlos's parents tried to get married, but the Air Force wouldn't recognize their relationship, and they ultimately transferred Carlos's dad back to the States. His mom eventually married another man.
I was very active teenager and supercharged.
In other words, Carlos was a handful. So when he was 14, his mom sent him to a Catholic monastery that offered apprenticeships in a bunch of different trades.
Okay, here we go.
He chose metal.
I liked the action. I liked the challenges I saw right away. The sparks, the fire, the power you need to tame the metal, and actually the will you have to impose on tools and equipment and bring it into the form you determine.
Carlos apprenticed for 6 years under master craftsmen. He says these were the men who literally helped rebuild Germany from the ground up after World War II.
You couldn't really wait for somebody to come in to build your houses back up. That wasn't happening. Nobody came. They had this strong background in arts and crafts and building things and inventing things and making things. They then could take that knowledge and put it to use to reconstruct themselves, to reinvent themselves.
So, after Carlos finished his apprenticeship, he decided he wanted to reinvent himself too.
I remember my dad in Detroit, United States, and I actually found an old letter he sent in 62. And so I took a little money, hopped on a plane, and came to Detroit. When I finally got here, I saw Cadillacs and streets. I loved everything. I arrived downtown, and I had the letter, of course, with the address on. And wherever I go, there was people, they always was friendly. Some ladies say, yeah, this is, you know, nearby right here. My brother is a cab driver, he drives you there. When I arrived there, it was an abandoned house. So I just knocked on the neighbor's doors and kind of explained who I was. So the neighbor brought me over to the adjacent house, which was my father's brother. Then they tried to find my dad. And so an hour later, he walked in the door and there I was. Hello, Dad.
Carlos was only 2 years old the last time he saw his dad.
So there's millions, gazillions of questions you have, and they can't be answered in a day or two or in a week. And so if you realize that and you just give it the time as it takes for you to understand and for them to understand you, then it's all going to work out at the end.
My name is Clarence Cheeks. I am Carlos Neubach's father, and I am 81 years old.
Carlos and his dad reunited in 1984.
I'm just helping him out the best I can and hope he, can get ahead.
Today, he manages his son's studio, a huge three-story yellow brick building that used to be a fish processing plant. He's the building manager, resident chef, dog watcher.
Right on way, boy.
And Carlos needs the help. Most of his commissions came from private residences in the wealthy suburbs surrounding Detroit. But since the recession, the luxury market has almost disappeared.
Now it's the cheapest way, the fastest way, and just the bare minimum.
Here in the city, unemployment and poverty have been a reality for decades. Some areas are so desolate that when visitors come to Detroit, they sometimes compare the burned-out buildings and abandonment to post-war Europe.
I'm seeing the parallels that happened in the reconstruction of Germany, and I see the remedies that it took. And I really see that it's the same medicine we need here in Detroit.
And that medicine is meaningful work.
I was looking for a job, you know, no money coming in, no income.
This is Sheree Cottingham. He's 23.
After that, you know, I started going downhill. Hate to say it, but, you know, gang banging and all that. My sister didn't want me into it, so she moved me away out the neighborhood. Moved me over this way.
And then his cousin hooked him up with Carlos.
The first day here, you know, he had me moving gates, building them. It was a lot of work. The next day I came, he like, I'm glad you came. I thought you was going to give up. I used to pray that I wake up the next day or get to see the next day. Now, you know, I get to do it every day. A huge weight off my chest.
Okay, so now we want to get a wrench and tighten those up. Tighten, make them tight. All right. He feeling himself better. That's why he coming every day.
He don't just show you. He teach you everything he know. Everything from the welding to the grinding to cutting. I fell in love with the work, and I've been coming here since.
Sheree told me that he tries to talk to his friends about what he's doing, but they're just not interested.
When I tell them, it seems like it's going in one ear and not the other. That's a lot of stuff I had to do other than sell drugs.
Like building a windmill out of old car parts. Carlos and Sheree say they'll be generating their own power any day now.
This is just the beginning right here. If we're proving our theories, if we graduating from project to project, the sky will be the limit.
But for now, Carlos and Sheree are here, casting, welding, and riveting on Detroit's east side. And 81-year-old Clarence is here too, watching over his son's studio. He seems more than content doing the laundry, feeding his dogs, and cooking lunch for Sheree and Carlos.
I only want to make my dad proud.
You can find out more about Carlos and his work online. Just search for Carlos Neubach. That's our show for this week. Thanks to Katie Britton for production assistance. Our theme music is by Kevin Bartlett. This show is a national production of Northeast Public Radio. Our executive producer is Dr. Alan Shartok. Best wishes from all of us for a happy holiday season.